see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I don't know. After I was on the show and I got to know like the fan base of the show and stuff, you could kind of tell what type of guys the girls watching the show would typically go after, which is like a white dude with a beard and like a conservative haircut, right? Like, that's pretty much like, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty much the type of dude that gets cast for the show.
Yeah.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor-adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon. This week on The Bachelor, the greatest seasons ever, ABC is just keeping us in the purgatory of 2016 with JoJo Fletcher's brutal, like literally brutal season of The Bachelorette.
Also known as the Trumpiest season of The Bachelorette ever.
Yeah, it's bad. A lot of Trump bros. So almost immediately after Ben Higgins told JoJo that he loved her and then dumped her at the proposal altar, you may remember that, we covered it last week, JoJo was already sequined up meeting new bachelors and, yes, meeting some who went on to, for example, date Tommy Lahren or be really overt bigots on social media, James Taylor.
And they all had the exact same haircut as noted white nationalist Richard Spencer. Just a delightful bunch. But before we dig in, it's time for some calls to action.
This week, as Pride Month is coming to a close, we're encouraging everyone to donate to the Black Trans Travel Fund. They describe themselves as a grassroots mutual aid-based organization developed for the purpose of providing Black transgender women with the financial resources necessary for them to be able to self-determine and access their safest travel options. So, you know, Black trans women are a very vulnerable group. They experience a high rate of violence. So it's really important for them to be able to get from place to place safely. And we will have the link to donate in our show notes for this week.
We also just want to circle back to the Bachelor Diversity campaign, because of course, ABC has taken some steps in the right direction, casting Matt, apologizing for the way that the show has handled race, specifically from the executive producers, providing more links to resources about Black Lives Matter on social media channels. But there are a lot of other action items that that campaign was calling for that haven't been committed to. And, you know, I think we really all need to seize this moment because we don't know the next time that an opening like this might come around where the network is actually forced to consider people of color, consider their anti-racist audience. And so I think, you know, just keep tweeting at the producers. If you haven't signed the petition, definitely sign the petition and follow Batch Diversity on all of their social accounts because they'll be pushing out, you know, more of those specific asks.
Yeah. And always in general, every week is a good week to stay engaged. Make sure you're keeping up with the news. Make sure that you are finding ways to stay involved locally and to make sure that you're part of the conversation around Black Lives Matter. So So let's dig into JoJo's season, which, to be honest, I had mostly forgotten. I don't know if that's because it was 4 years ago or if it was because I blocked out being doxxed by one of its stars, or if it's because we had to do a video component for the podcast that season and we watched all the episodes in our very hot, unair-conditioned studio until well after midnight. But I was reminded this week, it was a pretty high-octane season, not always for good reasons.
Yeah, Chris Harrison opens this recap by telling us that this is the season that brought us, quote, one of the most outrageous bad boys, Chad Johnson. You know, I prefer to call him the toxic, violent asshole who doxxed Claire and was arrested for domestic violence, but, you know, potato, potato. And I just really think we need to ban the term bad boys from our vocabulary. It doesn't really mean anything if they're actually bad. Maybe don't make that sexy. If they're not actually bad, why are you calling them bad? Just let's leave that one in the past, Chris.
Yeah, it's sort of a pro badness in men phrase. So like, is that something we need in 2020? I don't think so. But you know, Chad was like the most aggro of the dudes, like slimly over Alex, the Marine, who was also quite invested in his toxic masculinity. But the season like had a trend, and it was really Trumpy bros mixed with really soft, tender boys. And it created a really interesting mixture that affected, I think, a lot of the season. But, you know, we have some standouts. You guys may remember Jordan. He's the one who won. He's Aaron Rodgers' brother. James Taylor, the guitar-playing softy who turned out to be a huge bigot. And then all the guys with identical haircuts.
Just a real cast of characters, some of whom went on to appear on a handful of other shows and have really become lasting figures in the Bachelor universe, like Wells, who's the forever bartender of this franchise. You know, JoJo really was the best bachelorette with the absolute worst taste in men. Like, she is dynamic and beautiful and fun and sharp and witty, and also tends to be really into kind of shitty, boring, bigoted men. So, it was really a mixed bag, and that really stood out watching back last night. I think one of the major themes that we need to touch on for this season was the just crazy cesspool of toxic masculinity that was present throughout the cast and like all of the dates. It was
just
basically everywhere. Its own character.
It was just everywhere. It was, the whole thing was just a stew of toxic masculinity. I mean, for one thing, all of the dates seem designed to show off macho-ness. There's a date where they all train to be firefighters, you know, and Wells, who is not a firefighter or a CrossFit hero or anything of the sort, ended up getting sort of pilloried the whole date for being too weak to perform as a firefighter at a moment's notice. And JoJo, it weirdly just seems really drawn to the tough guy, like beefcake men. But also when Wells almost passes out, she's into that too. She gives him some special attention. She is really touched by how hard he's trying. Like, I love that JoJo just contains all of these contradictions in her taste in men.
It was really interesting also to watch Chris Harrison grapple with the way that specifically Wells was portrayed on the season. You know, Wells is a character who was like roundly mocked for not making out with JoJo quickly enough. Like, Robbie's like, what's he doing? I haven't been able to keep my hands off her. And just,
yeah,
like,
don't brag about that.
Yeah,
dude.
It was weird and gross. And Chris Harrison, you know, Wells then went on to be, again, this like really popular figure in the franchise. He is now engaged to Sarah Hyland, a very famous actress. So he is like a beloved and valuable member of this franchise now, which I'm not sure that production necessarily thought would be the outcome when, you know, he was on JoJo's season. And Chris is like, dude, it's like so confusing to see you then and then see the man you are now. And I love that Wells is just like, well, like that guy on the show is this guy. Like, I'm still the same. I just felt like super awkward in all of the weird, uncomfortable situations that you guys put me in. And I wasn't trying to force a woman to kiss me.
Chris can't handle the cognitive dissonance of being friends with the man who can't just like swoop in for the kill with a kiss, like a real alpha would.
Exactly.
So they have Wells on to give commentary all the way through the first part of the episode with Sarah Hyland. And Sarah is forced to just repeatedly defend Wells against the implication from Chris Harrison that her fiance is a huge embarrassing loser who can't kiss.
Very odd. But I did love that she was like, you know what? If he had been an overly aggressive bro who insisted that JoJo suck his face immediately, I probably wouldn't have been that into him, which is a fair point. And I think, you know, Claire and I felt the same way watching Wells.
Yes, which is why we're engaged to Wells
exactly.
now as well.
Exactly. We're just like Sarah Hyland.
Yes.
I did kind of feel like Sarah was the real star of this segment because she's wearing a vote t-shirt the whole time. And like before she gets cut off, she yells, "Everyone remember to register to vote," like very quickly. Like she was clearly like planning this, and Wells even comments, "Oh, she got it in."
But here's the thing. They could have edited it out, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, we'll give her that.
You know, I was like, go Sarah.
So we need to talk about Chad.
Chad sucked
up so much of the air in the season. And what's weird to me about Chad is like, he was so entertaining, but also so terrible. Like there are points early in the season where he seemed like he was going to be a fun villain, you know, like
he has funny little lines. He said like weird things and ate meat in a very specific way. Like just those oddities that like, okay, this guy's an aggro douchebag, but he's kind of like entertaining. Like his cockiness is sort of entertaining.
Yeah. And he was oblivious to humor in a way that was itself funny, like when they went on that first group date at ESPN and all the guys have to do the football touchdown celebrations and then fake propose to JoJo. And he's like, "I don't get why they keep being like, I love everything about you. They don't even know her." Like, yeah, no, Chad, they know. They're being funny.
It's a contest thing.
It's like a funny contest.
You act it out.
Yes, but then things just
took a very dark turn.
Yeah, I mean, first he does call JoJo naggy when she critiques his fake proposal during this.
Which objectively sucked, so.
And he starts off his trend of always saying, you know, of always suggesting that people are causing him to do things with their words. So, you know, if she's going to be naggy, he's just going to have to call that out. That's just how it is. And later, if someone is going to keep saying something that he doesn't like, he's just going to have to punch them. Like, there's no other way to get them to
stop. Or cut off their legs and their arms and their head and throw their bloodied torso into the pool. It's just the kind of thing that is out of your control, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they're the ones who are in control. They need to change their behavior.
Yeah. So yeah, we very quickly turn from this like misogynistic campiness to just like outright threats of violence. And because the big chunks of the cast are similarly like
aggro
and prone to shows of masculinity in the very specific traditional kind of toxic sense, he gets into it with a lot of them, specifically, you know, Alex, who's wielding his Marines credentials, and they're just like both threatening to punch each other.
Alex and Chad both project a lot of insecurity about their masculinity. Like they both seem constantly to want to prove to the other person and America that they would definitely win a fight, which they're not going to have, but like they would have it. It's the other guy who's scared. Like, I do it. Come at me, bro. Like, that's the vibe of their interaction for the entire first half of the season.
And it's exhausting.
And everyone is on Alex's side at first, of course, because Chad is so unpleasant, except for Daniel, the Canadian model with the body of a Lamborghini. We sadly did not revisit his statements to that effect. But Daniel is Chad's only ally, and finally has to ask Chad to tone it down because he's starting to look bad associating with him. Like if, and he says, you know, let's say you're Hitler. And Chad says, please don't say I'm Hitler. And Daniel's like, all right, Donald Trump, the next thing down.
Which, you know, the longer we sit with Donald Trump, the more that comparison feels apt. So perhaps Daniel had some insight.
He's like, you can still be bad, but just don't advertise it as much so that it doesn't reflect so badly on me. Like Mussolini also bad, but people don't think about Mussolini first, right? He was a little more subtle with his badness. Or George Bush also, you know, he went on
more
a
subtle
campaign to be like, my real calling is painting portraits of dogs. And wouldn't it be great if Chad had taken that approach for Daniel?
He doesn't.
No.
He does not. He, you know, continues with the outright threats of violence. And then after Evan, oh, poor sweet Evan, who I just love so much, does a stand-up act that shades Chad for using steroids, Chad physically assaults him and punches a door.
And I wanted to say he physically assaults him two times. First, he rips Evan's shirt while Evan is returning to his seat. And then he later shoves Evan in the throat, which is apparently a thing.
And
he punches the door.
Does not get kicked off the show, although they do bring a security guard out for show. I mean, it was, God, this season was just, like, there would have been an inordinate amount of toxic masculinity without Chad. And then Chad, like, tripled it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much revisiting it. There's such a high density in the recap of overt threats of violence. I mean, he eventually tells Jordan, you know, this might be a show, there might be cameras and guards, but the show's going to end and I'm going to come find you, basically. So then when Alex and Chad inevitably are sent on a two-on-one into the woods, both wielding bladed tools, because that seemed like a good idea to someone, Alex takes JoJo aside and says, Chad threatened to find Jordan after the show and attack him. And JoJo goes, Jordan? Like, Jordan? Like, the one I'm definitely going to be with after this? And that was the end for Chad. I mean, she's not willing to risk Jordan.
Yeah, it also reminded me, you know, of something we talked about at the time, which was that JoJo really didn't see any of Chad's like escalating behavior except in very little snippets until this is brought to her attention. And like, they were just keeping this real violent, abusive man around to possibly marry their lead, which doesn't sit great with me.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
No.
The idea that after he had attacked another contestant, during a date, that they were like, it's fine with us if she eventually marries him. That was troubling to me.
Yes.
At the time. So Chad finds out that Alex has sold him out, and they have the really memorable interaction where Chad suggests that Alex have some milk, and Alex says, I don't like milk. And Chad says, life ain't all blueberries and paper airplanes. And Alex is like,
yeah, man.
I agree with that.
That is where we can agree.
And then Chad is sent off into the woods by JoJo to the joy and protein scattering of all of the men.
I mean, Wells really shined in the ceremonial scattering of the protein powder.
Yeah.
And he refers to Chad as, quote, probably the worst person any of us have ever met.
You know, I haven't met Chad, but I would agree with that.
Yeah, that seems accurate.
Somewhere in the midst of this season, and I don't want to linger on this, but Chad had lost his mother some months before the show began, which is quite sad. And I think contributed to JoJo feeling like there was more in Chad, that like he was clearly grieving this profound loss. But it ended up sort of becoming an excuse for him to behave violently and to impose his will through violence or threats of violence because he was grieving. And I took issue with that. And Chad tried to tweet my home address at one point in order to, like, I guess he couldn't punch me in the face because he didn't know exactly where I was. So he was like, well, better find her address and make sure someone punches her in the face.
Luckily, he's bad at doxing.
Yeah.
So tweeted not my the home wrong address.
Not my home address. I hope that no one ever got an unpleasant visitor at the address that he did tweet. But, you know, when we talk about Chad, one of the rare Bachelor villains who is actually really personally berated me. So when Chris Harrison said, everyone who has been personally berated by Chad, raise your hand. I raised my hand. I couldn't help but raise my hand.
You cannot tell a lie.
I can't.
Yeah. The other group of men that we wanted to talk about on this season were the soft boys who really just rose up from the ashes and became, I'd say, three of the biggest success stories in Bachelor Nation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have Evan, Wells, and Derek. None of them seem like huge contenders because JoJo's type was so obviously sort of the meathead. But she ended up taking these three guys pretty far. Like, she clearly enjoyed all of them. So she ended up with this unusual mix of really sensitive guys who, you know, Wells was more of like, he's a radio DJ. He was more of a jokester, and they had good conversations. You know, Derek, such a sweetheart. Evan too fell into that category, and she brought them longer than they might have made it on some other seasons, despite the fact that she typically went for a different kind of guy. And then they all ended up going on Paradise. Evan met Carly on Paradise and they got married and they have adorable kids now. Derek also had some notable stints on Paradise, and Wells became first the hottest commodity on the beach and then the permanent bartender.
And all
so they've
three
all
of them,
become huge figures in Bachelor Nation.
And all three of them are in, you know, happy relationships now. Like, you love to see it.
Growth. You love to see that.
You love to see it. I also just, my heart freaking melted when they, you know, they had Evan and Wells come on to check in about Chad rather than giving Chad any more airtime himself. Thank God. And I just loved, first of all, Evan's great self-awareness about, you know, the way he was framed as not the alpha male. And then when they brought Carly and their kids out and they saw that Wells was on the screen as well, and Bella just says, like, bye, Wellsy. And it was just adorable.
Just to Matt, think of all of the kids of Bachelor pairings that are old enough to talk now. It freaks me out.
It's really cute. Also, I think that Evan and Carly's baby Chuck looks kind of like Claire's son, Matt. Just two soft boys in the making.
Aw, I'll take it. He's very cute. Derek, we do get a full segment on because he made it quite far and he had a very memorable exit. So they devote a full highlight to Derek.
Mostly to his exit. His extended weeping. And I had, you know, obviously remembered this because Derek is good and self-aware and there's lots of great gifs of him crying all over the internet. But I had forgotten the extensive monologue that occurs in which he's like grappling with his own emotional response.
Aww.
You know, he says first, which I thought was hilarious, is, I'm Derek and Derek is imperfect. And I was like, Derek, literally, why were you referring to yourself in the third person?
This is how much they psychologically break people during their exits. They're like, I have to dissociate from myself.
Yeah,
to discuss
like, I've never heard him speak this way. you know, and then he's crying and he looks at the camera and he's like, what? Why am I crying? Which is just such a delightful and hilarious moment of self-awareness.
Yeah, he does during his check-in with Chris Harrison. He says, you know, I grew up with a work really hard and never cry sort of ethos. And so this was a moment when the dam broke and now he's a very tender, sensitive, emotional person, I guess.
Sometimes.
In the best way.
The Bachelor provides growth, as we've said. And
it really does. And Derek is lovely. So yeah. I'm glad that it did that for him.
Yeah. And anyone who listens to this show know that we just love to see tender, shows of male emotion. And this was a great one, especially set to Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. I mean, the brilliance.
And then we do get into all of the top guys who just blend together. They have the same haircut. They're all kind of stoic or at least boring white guys.
Who love Fox News.
Who love Fox News. And most of whom, had kind of bad post-show arcs. Yeah. We have Luke, who was on the show.
Beloved.
He had a huge bachelor campaign. He was a veteran. He seemed very tenderhearted. He really fell for JoJo. He could actually,
express himself in complete complex sentences, which by the end was a rarity.
Yeah, but he did struggle to say I love you to JoJo. He ended up saying it right before the rose ceremony after Hometowns when she ultimately sent him home, which created a very emotional moment because she freaked out. She was like, should I reconsider? Does this change things? And then she sends him home anyway after he's just said, I love you. So they had this really heart-wrenching goodbye. And then he was maybe going to be the bachelor, but it turned out he was just like sleeping with everyone cheating on people. There was a whole reputational crisis. He was not the bachelor. We didn't really hear from him for a while. He still has a pretty sturdy fan base and he's a singer. So he's been working in that area. And I think they try to give him a little redemption here. Chris has him on, checks him in with him. He's in Nashville. And he said he'd be open to coming on Bachelor in Paradise.
So yeah, I wonder if we will see him as one of those kind of like old time exciting throwback contestants on a future season when
that
they
the
can
guys
actually...
are all like, who is this dude? I've never heard of him. And the women are all like, oh my god, Luke. He'll be that guy.
Yeah. And then we go to Chase and Robbie, who, to be honest, like Robbie, I have literally nothing to say about him except that he looked like a Ken doll and also had the personality of a Ken doll. Yeah. And like I fail on rewatch to see any reason why JoJo would be into him.
He's the number two guy in the season, and yet I remember nothing about him except that his hair and his beard look like they snap on.
And he went on to do many a trashy reality TV show. He did show up on Vanderpump Rules. He was on X on the Beach. He has a terrible reputation as well. In terms of cheating on women, including, I guess, Amanda Stanton. He's a mess.
Yeah, it was Amanda's, I think, second really bad Bachelor in Paradise relationship, which was unfortunate. Chase, I do find more memorable, despite him being also very stoic, because when he does come out with something, it's always a very interesting formulation, He, on their fantasy suite date, they go fishing and he says a number of things. For example, we're in this magical place with monkeys, fishermen, saltwater, and fish.
And there was no and, Claire, just a trailing fish. List.
He was just listing everything he saw. And
yeah, he's like, I spy a water.
Saltwater. when he tells her that night that he loves her, she says, thank you for telling me that. And then she's like, now that you've said that, I feel like I will never love you. And he says, I jumped over a hurdle I've never jumped over before. And now I'm skewered, which is a visual that I didn't need. Like, I was like, you're really describing a very graphic thing that could happen to someone, Chase. And I wonder why you chose to put it that way. They have a rough goodbye. I'd forgotten. He was quite angry that she had let him go that way.
I assume, and which kind of makes sense thinking back on it, that like production had pushed him really hard to say it. And you could sort of feel that anger at the time. But look, my empathy for him is just a little bit limited. He did go on to date Tomi Lahren, who is one of the worst people on the internet. So
yeah. Not great showings from this season of guys. But she does ultimately end up with Jordan Rogers, who got the first impression rose. She was clearly super into him from day one. It's the only question ever was, is he taking this seriously, or is this something that he's doing to like up his profile because he wasn't as successful at football as Aaron Rodgers? Like, is he just going to be a guy who's trying to cling to the outskirts of fame and like meet hot girls, date models, be a player basically? But he convinces JoJo that he's really into her, and he proposes. And Chris Harrison says, "I never get tired of watching that," which leads me to wonder how often Chris just rewatches proposals of
it's
other
just,
people.
It's just what he and his son, who recently graduated, have been doing together. It's just a good, clean family fun.
And JoJo and Jordan are still together. So that
Shows 4 years later. You know, I kind of love to see a bachelor couple that has really gotten to know each other and has, they talk about the way that, you know, their first year together, which a lot of couples who come off the show, that the scrutiny is very intense. And so they say, you know, that we had a real conversation where we were like, are we going to make the decision to be in this, or is this not going to work and we should part ways? And he's like, you know, the conversation ended with us deciding to recommit, and it's been 4 years. They clearly sold off that tacky Neil Lane engagement ring, and Jordan reproposed with a very beautiful ring. Their wedding was supposed to be during COVID, so it has now been postponed to next year. But Chris does have JoJo's parents bring over a wedding cake to her house while they're filming, and that was very sweet. JoJo and Jordan honestly are one of the rare couples that have charmed me more in just the things I've seen from them post show. They just, it's very clear that they have a lot of mutual respect and love and care for each other. And I, you know, you love to see it. And I'm very glad for her she didn't choose Robbie.
Me too. I mean, can you imagine how that would have gone?
Terribly.
Yeah. Usually when a show relationship falls apart pretty soon after, I'm like, probably the same thing would have happened if she picked the runner up. But just imagine Robbie versus how well things have gone with Jordan. I mean, thank God. But some things were left out, obviously. I mean, once again, the show is incredibly white because none of the top handful of guys who get spotlighted are men of color. Same old, same old. In fact, there isn't even very much variation within the white guys that they have, because so many of them have the same color and cut of hair and body shape and attitude. But we do get left out, specifically James Taylor, and who was like such a sweetheart of the show. Like, he was one of the soft boys. He felt like he was not handsome enough for JoJo. He was insecure, but he played guitar. So like, he had that kind of underdog appeal to a lot of women who watched the show. And then since leaving the show, has made a name for himself in Bachelor Nation by just tweeting really bigoted things and feuding with more progressive people in Bachelor Nation, like Ashley Spivey.
Yeah. You know, he's definitely like of the ilk that believes like coronavirus was a hoax, or at least believed that at one point. He's tweeted horrific misogynist stuff, horrific transphobic things. He's full MAGA. So, you know, honestly, I was glad to see him get no airtime.
Yeah, exactly. We also never got into the whole plot line around Aaron Rodgers being absent, which I remember being quite a thing on the show, that Jordan and his family was not really in close touch with his brother anymore. It came up a lot on The Hometown, but they really leaned out of the Aaron Rodgers stuff and gave Jordan more room to stand on his own in this recap.
And we didn't get one of our favorite moments of the season, which was Derek explicitly calling out Chad's misogyny. And I remember being like shocked that the word misogyny was used on the show.
Yeah. I mean, there was so much Chad content that I hesitate to say there should have been more in this recap, but that was a little moment that I really appreciated in the season. Would have liked to revisit. but you know, you can't cover everything. I think that we've hit all of the top points.
I think so.
So let's finish up by discussing the quarantine check-in, which was Tyler C. and Matt James, the new Bachelor.
Also known as Tyler C.'s best friend.
Oh, yeah.
Rachel was really correct with, you know, her assessment that they are bringing in a Black Bachelor who is just attached at every moment to one of the most popular of all time white contestants. But their friendship does seem very lovely. Tyler has just some beautiful quarantine hair happening.
And
great facial hair. Like, he's just a very beautiful man.
Yeah, so he and Evan both have very clear quarantine hair, and watching the difference made me think about how it is when I see a hairstyle work on like someone, like a model, and I'm like, I'm cute, I could do that. And then I do, and I'm like, not that cute. Like, it doesn't work for me. That's not a good look for me. Tyler is just, he can just pull stuff off, and it's not fair.
It's not fair.
He also talks about how resourceful he and his friends are. He's like, yeah, we're getting through it. We're finding ways to, you know, like if it's raining, we'll go skimboarding on the lawn of our house.
Same.
I was like, yeah, that's what resourcefulness is finding ways to have fun with your expensive sporting equipment and home.
Yeah. You know, it's just exactly what I do in my 450 square foot apartment. The same thing.
Listen, we're all doing our best.
Yeah.
So they bring Tyler out first to basically set Matt James up and talk about how great Matt is. And then bring out their new Bachelor once the warm up has been done. Really harken back to what Rachel said.
But he is very charming and very hot.
So. Yeah, that's all you need. I mean, he tells us a little bit more about himself and his family. He says his mom wants a basketball team of grandkids. So no time to waste. She's really ready for him to settle down. And he said, you know, he's heard from a lot of his Black friends who don't really watch the show that they're excited that he's being given this opportunity and that he's going to get to show a diverse relationship. So he seemed to be saying, you know, that he's getting a lot of positivity from all the people in his life and seems really, really pumped to get started.
Yeah,
I'm pumped to
also
watch a season. Let's get filming.
I know, I'm ready. I did love though that like you could tell Chris just was like, I'm not equipped to even say the word Black. So he's like, ah, yes, we all knew you were the right pick, Matt. Thank you. Yes. Cannot wait. Don't say the word diversity, Chris.
So I don't know when the next time we'll see. Like, we would get to know The Bachelor a little bit during the previous season of The Bachelorette. I don't know if they're going to keep trying to check in with him so that we start to build more of a rapport. Like, they could. They've never really picked a Bachelor ahead of a Bachelorette season like this that I know of, where they could try to work that in some way, in some sort of check-in or guest appearance. I would be curious to see if they tried that. Who knows? I would like to get to know him a little bit more before his season starts, but we have a long time to wait.
That brings us to the end of our first part of our episode, and we're going to take a quick break. But when we get back, we're going to get to hear from Grant Kemp about his experience on JoJo's season.
Okay, so you got engaged. Congrats. Now you may be wondering what comes next.
If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola.
With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste your cake.
Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually even enjoyable.
There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or, you know, from your couch, which is certainly how, if I was planning a wedding, I would definitely want to do it as loungily as possible.
So important.
I also just know myself. I know that planning any kind of event, like even a birthday party, can get very stressful. And so it's been really cool to see friends use Zola. It really seems to make everything a lot less stressful. And as a frequent wedding attender, I love to be able to hop on that Zola registry and just purchase a gift. Easy peasy. I know I've done it. I won't forget. Thank you, Zola.
Yeah, everything's all in the same place. It's perfect. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all like weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a while, or even not that long, knows that we love Article. I mean, honestly, I'm looking around my home right now. Coffee tables from Article. That lovely chair out on my deck, Article. Our big console, Article. My bed frame, Article. This is an Article household.
It is. And it's, I mean, it was an inspiration to me. We finally got our first Article piece of furniture recently, our new couch. And my husband and I are both constantly just like, how did we live before this couch? This is such an improvement over what we had before. It's so comfortable. It just seems to get more comfortable every day. I mean, it's the couch you dream of.
And the reason that we have both been able to find ideal furniture on Article is because Article believes in delightful design for every home.
And thanks to their online-only model, they have some really delightful prices, too.
Their curated assortment of mid-century modern, coastal, industrial, Scandi, and boho designs makes furniture shopping simple.
And their team of designers are all about finding that perfect balance between style, quality, and price, because we all want the best of all of those three things united in one piece of furniture, right?
Plus, they're dedicated to thoughtful craftsmanship that stands the test of time and, you know, looks good doing it.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
To claim, visit article.com/LTSI, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout.
That's article.com/LTSI for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled B-A-B-B-E-L.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI. And now back to the show.
You know, we got to hit on some highlights and, of course, lowlights from JoJo's season during Monday Night Special, but we wanted to continue digging deeper into the stories of contestants who didn't get as much screen time.
This week, we chatted with Grant Kemp, who appeared on JoJo's season of The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise 3.
What's up, guys? My name's Grant Kemp. I was on JoJo's season of The Bachelorette, and I live in LA.
Grant, thank you so much for joining us today. We really had a great time revisiting JoJo's season during this week's episode. Did you watch the episode, the recap episode at all?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I didn't watch the episode because I actually was in a studio session, to be completely honest with you, doing a song last night. And like, you know, I don't know. I was there. I remember everything that happened. So like, I don't really need to watch myself on TV again, if that makes sense. Like, I mean, I guess it would kind of be cool, but I don't know. I'm not one to watch my shows really ever.
That's totally fair. I don't even like to hear my own voice replayed on the podcast. So if there was like a visual element as well, like that's just a whole other thing. How did you end up being cast on The Bachelorette in the first place?
Oh, this is a funny question. And a lot of people are really surprised by this. I was actually at work one night and I had just gotten back into modeling and stuff. And like my booker at the time was like super all over the place. He would like miss castings and stuff for me sometimes. So I would kind of go on the casting websites and see if he missed anything that he didn't submit me for. And I was clicking around and like, I ended up on, you know, commercials, and then it ended up going into reality TV. You know, I was just bored. And I see this advertisement for like The Bachelorette, and it's like this website, and it has like the O is the ring. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I'm like, oh, this is that one show. And like, I remember the only time I would watch the show is if like a girl forced me to, you know what I mean? And I was like, all right, whatever. And I used to make fun of it, you know? And I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna put my name in, like who cares? Cause I was just messing around. So I remember you're supposed to put like 25 pictures of yourself uploaded, and then like this big bio about why you should be on the show, and then submit like a 12-minute video of you talking about why you should be on the show or something like that, something along those lines, right? And so I uploaded 3 pictures and I said, I'm nice, I'm thoughtful, and I can always make people laugh, and just click submit. And like the next day at noon, I'll never forget, I got a missed call, a voicemail, and an email like within 12 hours. And I was like, this can't be a joke. Like, I didn't tell anybody I submitted for this. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I'll call them back or whatever. And then I did a Skype interview with them that night, and I happened to be at the fire station. So of course I wore my uniform, you know, cause why not? Right. And so I Skyped with them. I remember it was like a couple women and they seemed excited. And then a week later they flew me to LA, and like a month after that I was on the show. So that's how it ended up working out for me. Like, I had no intention of ever going on the show. It was just a joke.
And they were like, but we want to be in the Grant Kemp business immediately. They were very excited.
Yeah, I think there was a reason for that because of, you know, I think that they were lacking a lot of Black guys on the show, and they saw my application. And I mean, from a marketing standpoint, they were like, we got to go with this guy. Like, I mean, to be straight up, that's my thoughts on it. I could be wrong. Who knows? But like, I think that's why I got a call back so quick. I think my application went into like a different section or something, if you know what I mean.
Right. But did that come up at all during casting or with production while you were in the house? Was race ever discussed openly at all?
It was never openly discussed. But I mean, you could kind of tell from like, I don't know, after I was on the show and I got to know like the fan base of the show and stuff, you could kind of tell what type of guys the girls watching the show would typically go after, which is like a white dude with a beard and like a conservative haircut, right? Like, that's pretty much like, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty much the type of dude that gets cast for the show.
Yeah.
And so I think when casting and, you know, at ABC found me, they were like, damn, like this guy, he's a model, he's a firefighter. He counts as Black, but he's not super Black. So like, he's still, you might be able to take him home to your dad type shit. God. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's kind of the vibe they got off me. And so that's why, yeah, I kind of got cast for the show over a guy that would speak like your typical Black guy or is a little more Black than me or whatever, right? Because it's, you know, it's marketing, and the fan base of the show is girls that are white. But to be honest with you, most of the girls that watch the show are white. So it's like, I get why they picked me over, you know, another type of Black guy to be on the show.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. It is a very, very sense, white, right? Audience. Yeah.
Very, very white and racist audience in a lot of ways. So yeah. And I think it's good for us to just like be honest about that. And it definitely impacts casting. Did you see the former casting producer, Jazzy, who wrote an open letter to Bachelor production on social media?
I haven't seen the letter. I mean, I can kind of maybe think of what the letter might have been about. But yeah.
She was saying that she was brought on, you know, during Rachel's season and then cast for the following few. And was explicitly told, you know, don't cast women with locks or, you know. And that anti-Blackness felt really present to her.
I totally believe that. I mean, without even you telling me what the open letter said, I can probably guess, you know, what she was probably mad about or whatever, you know what I mean? Because they do, if you think about it, you know, I mean, I went to school for like marketing, right? So if I see a crowd of people, I'm going to think, okay, how can I appease this crowd and keep, you know, sales up from them, right? So it's like, it's the same when it comes to producing movies and stuff like that in the entertainment industry. It's like a lot of, you know, of the big directors, like they don't want to take a chance on that because they know that this is probably going to work better and it's probably going to sell more because of their consumer base. You know what I mean? So that's why, you know, that's why those things are in place, because the people watching the show, they can almost know that they're not going to like it or accept it as much, you know. That's really what it comes down to. It's just numbers.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that like after you finished filming, you got more of a sense of the audience and like what might have been playing into casting's decision there. When you were filming or like going into the show or while you were filming, was this something you had any sense of, like when you were in the house, when you looked around, when you dealt with producers or talked to the other guys, did you get a sense of the Bachelor's relationship with race, or was it something that didn't really sink in until you got off the show?
You know, I got a little bit of it. Like I sort of understood because I did watch the show enough to kind of know what the fan base was. And so going into it, I kind of knew, I was like, okay, this is how this is going to be. Like, it's definitely not going to be a house that represents, you know, all of the different races that are in this country, right? Like, it's not going to be an even split. It's going to be what the girls that watch the show typically would want to see, right? And that's the thing, like, that I wasn't surprised by it at all. I mean, it wasn't any different for me than any other guy while I was filming the show, right? But at the same time, like, you know, even with, you know, the way that, you know, even the themes of certain things that you do on the show are typically something that, I don't know, it's sort of hard to explain. Like, most of the activities and the themes of what you do on the show are pretty white, if that makes sense.
It, yes, it does.
You know what I mean? I don't even know how else to explain it, but it's like just the little, just the way that the show is guided is like kind of like that. Cause I've grown up in areas that are almost like all white, right? So it's like, I've grown up around the people that lock their doors when like I walk by their car in a parking lot, right? Like, I grew up with those people. So it's like, I know how they think and I know those types of themes and stuff. And so that's kind of the theme that carried, that's carried through most seasons. Which isn't surprising.
Yeah, it's culturally very white in addition to being just like in terms of casting.
Casting.
It's got a very white culture.
And that definitely carries over to what we see in terms of post-show careers and, you know, just raw social media numbers. And that's something that I saw that you had kind of spoken to Page Six about, not the the way that race plays into that, but just the way that social media has an increased relationship with the show. How do you feel like the show has changed, if it has? And how do you feel like Instagram and social media in general played into your season or the way that the guys on your season, you know, move forward with their careers or their platforms afterwards?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I'm glad you asked me that because like when I was on JoJo's season and then when I did Paradise right after that, I feel like though, like that year, like 2016-ish, like that year was the first year that like, you know, like the Bachelor in Paradise the year before that, like Jade and Tanner like left the show together and like they, their Instagrams like blew up and they were making all this money and there's all these articles about them making all this money, which like, which is cool, right? But then it was, that was that shift of the time where people's Instagrams started blowing up and they started getting all these stupid brand deals and making a bunch of money. You know, and then so there was this big shift of like, oh, damn, like I can actually get a bunch of clout off this show. Because before, when Instagram wasn't a huge thing, like people would go on The Bachelor and then like that would be it. Like it would be kind of over because there was no, you know, riding it out and having people care about you for like the next year and a half until all the next seasons wash you out or whatever, right? So like that was the big shift. And so now, I mean, you even noticed the trend when I was on Paradise, when, you know, even when I was on Paradise in Australia like a year and a half, 2 years ago, like everybody's just trying to stay on the show as long as they can and get as much screen time as they can and find the person that's the most liked by the Bachelor fan base so that they can get the most attention and the most followers and the most, that's really kind of what the whole game is now. It's like, it's really not even about, you know, I don't know. It's just, I see the way people move and I see right through it. Like people start talking before Paradise starts and they start doing all these schemes and stuff. Like, and so it's really, that's, there's a big drive for that. But a lot of guys on my season, like they didn't even, they barely had any followers on Instagram. They didn't care. Like they weren't trying to be fashion bloggers. Like they just, they were just there on the show because their sister, their cousin like submitted them. You know what I mean? So like the, like most of the guys on my season were never there. Like, oh, I'm going to get all the Sugar Bear hair promos and I'm going to get the FabFitFun promos. Like they didn't care. Like, you know, but it's different because like other people have different motives. You know, I'm not saying it's just girls or it's just guys, like whatever, but people know that shit because they all watch the show and they see how big people are on Instagram now. So that's why I said that. I actually said that when I was on the red carpet at some event like a long time ago and they pulled that quote and like used it again because I dropped a song with James Kennedy and it was like in the same interview. It was weird. Like I was like, I didn't say that. And I was like, oh wait, I did say that. they archived my quote and then like and then used it. I was like, damn, you guys are crafty with this. Like, little
Who can remember everything they've said to a journalist, you know? I mean, how did you experience that? Like when you went after The Bachelorette, you did do Paradise. Did you find that there was like an impulse, or did it just feel like practical to start leveraging that social media wise? Or were you like, that's not really why I'm involved? Like, did it become sort of seductive?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kind of weird because like I was doing like fitness modeling and stuff like before I went on The Bachelorette. So I might maybe had like 9 or 10,000 followers or something from that. But like, I didn't really think anything of it. Like I used to have companies trying to send me free clothes and protein powder and stuff. And I always just didn't care. You know, I didn't think anything of it. Right. But then, you know, when my Instagram got bigger was when I left Paradise with my ex. Because they saw us as like a celebrity couple, right? We left the show together, blah, blah, blah. And then we ended up getting our own show with like Lauren and Ben and the twins on Freeform called Happily Ever After. Then we were like doing activities with each other and stuff. And so that was when really like all this stuff started kind of flying in. And, you know, all of a sudden we were invited to all these different events and functions and being hooked up with all these brand deals and stuff. And like, it was cool, but like I always made my own money, so I never really cared. You know, I was like, oh, this is cool. Like every now and then we'll get a big campaign for something or whatever. But I don't know. I never really got too sucked into it. But certain people, like they use it as an excuse to not work, which is a really bad idea because going on reality shows, it's not like, I mean, that's how the entertainment industry works. People don't understand that, like, you need to, unless you're on a show every single year, or you're in a movie every single year, or you're on a series or something, like people care about you for like 5 minutes and then they don't, you know? So those brand deals aren't going to keep coming.
Yeah. So it's fleeting.
It's yeah. And it's really a sickness that a lot of people have these days because they get a little hint of that feeling like they're famous or like they're important. And then they think that they've made it and they think that they're going to live off of like sugar bear hair. And it's not going to go down like that.
Yeah, you know? No, it's definitely, I can like see how it would be seductive and also see how it would be so, so fleeting.
Yeah.
We want to get into a little bit of your time on JoJo's season.
Sure.
One thing that really, I mean, stood out while we were watching it the first time, but certainly in the recap, was that there was a lot of kind of big shows of macho-ness on your cast. And obviously Chad being kind of embodiment of that. What was it like being in the house amidst that kind of like really aggro conflict?
I mean, there was definitely a lot of like hostility, but that was with everyone, right? Like a lot of the guys, like you could tell which guys had grown up playing sports and which guys hadn't, which guys had been in fraternities, which guys hadn't, because certain guys aren't used to being in a house with a bunch of different guys, like all like having issues all at the same time, you know? And most guys have never been in the position where they're all trying to date the same girl, you know? Like it just doesn't happen, right? Like you just don't care really. And so with all that going and like with all the animosity towards each other already, Chad did a really good job of like stirring that up and messing with people, because a lot of the times when the cameras were off, like Chad was fine, you know, but like it was production that really got under people's skin about Chad and got, it was a whole synergistic approach to like getting a reaction from the things that Chad was doing, you know what I mean? And it worked on most people. Like, yeah, I got into it with Chad a couple times, but like off camera, it was like, we were pretty much fine. You know, there was never any moments where like we had to be broken up or separated or anything, but like that's what happens when dudes are stuck in the same house and they're drunk and they're tired. Like they're just going to fight with each other, you know?
I mean, on this season, it seems like more than most seasons, there was a lot of at least big talk about fighting. I mean, so do you feel like Chad was like playing it up by making these threats, or do you think production was like finding a way to sort of set him up to make comments like that?
I think it was a little bit of both. It was a little bit of both, for sure. Because it, I mean, some people are very easily triggered and some people aren't, you know? And like, I mean, for me, I just didn't really allow it to trigger me the way it did other people. You know, I wasn't going to sit there and beat my chest and scream and say all this stuff when I knew I wasn't going to do it on, I'm not going to fight somebody on TV. Like, come on. You know what I mean? Like, of all places, like, you're going to fight someone on TV. Like, yeah, right. Like, that's just not going to happen. So it's like, save your breath and just don't say anything or just laugh it off or whatever. That was kind of my vibe with the whole thing. I was like, you guys realize this TV show, like, no one's going to fight.
They're just going to say, like, come at me, bro, like, a bunch of times. Yeah. Or, like, you want to take this outside?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Oh, my God. Alex and Chad, it was just, like, rewatching that. I'm just, like, nonsense after nonsense, like, threats of violence against each other while everyone just watched.
I mean, I thought it was entertaining, but.
It's interesting. There are some parts that are entertaining and other parts where you're just, like, how is this allowed to continue?
Yeah.
I mean, once Chad was like openly threatening murder, I was like, maybe it's time for him to go.
Yeah. Did it surprise you that he was never sent home?
Not at all. No.
No,
it was great. I mean, I knew I would like talk to the producers about this. I was like, how much longer are you guys going to keep him here for like the ratings? Like, how much longer are we going to squeeze this? Like, how many more drops of ratings are we squeezing out of Chad?
And they were like, as long as we want.
They were like, probably more. Yeah.
They were like, as long as possible without someone actually being murdered.
100%. Yeah.
Like once he'd sort of physically assaulted another contestant, as a viewer, I thought maybe this is where they'll draw the line. But he just got a firm talk from Chris Harrison.
Yeah, exactly. Which makes people even more scared, which is really good for the ratings. Cause then you can throw the ambulance scene in for the next preview. And then you have people totally locked in. There's gotta be at least one ambulance every show.
Yeah. So they can use it to make it seem like murder has been committed. It's
the biggest cliffhanger.
Always fun tease.
Yeah. Reality TV, the biggest cliffhanger you can ever put in a preview is the ambulance. No matter what happens, even if it just drives by the whole set.
It's true. Yeah.
The next show, you're like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah, it's always someone like having a panic attack, which, is very scary when it's happening to you. So your season also took place in the lead up to the 2016 election, which, you know, was a big topic in the country at the time. Were you guys talking about politics at all in the House?
You know what? It came up a little bit. I remember having a conversation with like Wells and like, I can't remember one of the other guys about it, and then things kind of shifted away from it. Like guys kind of didn't really want to get into it because I mean you could tell, you know, kind of what people's views were pretty quickly just because you spend so much time with each other. And like that was one of those things where when you're filming a show like that, there's so many other things going on that it's like it was pretty low on the priority list for like conversation and stuff like that. And plus they really don't want to touch that stuff on the show anyways, because the whole show, they don't want to talk about any of that on the show. They'll never bring up politics on the show. So even if we would start talking about it, like it was something that wasn't going to be emphasized, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. The show likes to exist in this world where they pretend that like partnership doesn't require talking about things like political views and religion and
values. It's easy to just push that stuff off to the side. We don't need to deal with that now. It's like,
Was it ever anything that came up with JoJo? Like, did you get the sense that she cared about where guys, you know, values lay in that way?
You know what? Like values, yeah, but politics, no. I mean, I think it was just mainly with her. It was like, your actual core values, which is understandable. I would want to know someone's values too, you know? So,
Yeah, probably should come up before you get engaged. Yeah. At least once or twice.
Yeah. You would think.
Brief conversation, whatever.
Yeah. You know, so you made it to week 5 on your season. And for years there, and things were written about it at the time when your season aired, been discussion about how Black contestants basically never make it past week 5. I mean, the exceptions after your season, being, you know, Rachel on Nick's season and Eric Bigger on Rachel's season. Yeah. Is that something that you thought about when you were eliminated or when it aired and you kind of saw that being discussed?
No, I mean, I really didn't think about it like in that regard at all. I mean, it for me, the way that things happened, they kind of happened for a reason, because there was, you know, there was definitely like a sexual connection between us. Not that we had sex, obviously, but like there was a sexual connection between us, but like the other connections when it came to like other conversations that we had, I could tell weren't quite up to speed with that. And then, you know, when I went home, it was kind of a weird situation because there was like a group date and like it ended because the whole thing got rained out and there was like this big South American storm that came through this group date that we were on. So like I didn't really have any chance to spend time with her there. And then there's supposed to be like a cocktail hour, and I was, you know, we were supposed to have this conversation about something, and then there was a bunch of drama happening, and like we didn't get into it, but like we had a conversation that was kind of uncomfortable, and then like that's the reason that I went home. So it was like, it was kind of, I kind of knew that it was, you know, like I was going home, and it was because of, you know, things not working out with us, you know what I mean? It didn't really have anything to do with like production, you know what I mean? Because there was definitely energy there, like we were definitely interested in each other, but it didn't work out for a reason, you know? It wasn't anything that production did or anything like that. So when I heard that stuff, I was like, I don't really think that was, you know, the show's producers or anything, like okay, he's had enough time, like we checked the box, like okay, get him off the show, like, and it wasn't anything like that, you know?
So. Yeah. Do you remember what the conversation was that you guys had? I don't remember so much from this season.
Yeah. I mean, it had something to do with like her ex or something like that. And like it the conversation just didn't go well from what I remember. There was a bunch of drama going on or something, and it just didn't go well.
It didn't land. You were like, ah, okay. I see that this is coming to an end soon. Yeah, it may be my time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you ended up, obviously we've mentioned, going on to appear on other Bachelor shows. Why did you decide that you wanted to continue, you know, with Bachelor Nation? What did you have a good experience on The Bachelorette? Like, what did you hope to do on Paradise?
Yeah. I mean, I had a good experience on The Bachelorette, you know, like the firefighter date, like for damn sure that was about me. You know what I mean? Like they were giving me a layup with that date, right? So I was like, all right, you know, like production likes me, you know what I mean? This is cool. And, you know, I was treated well and everything. And that's why I went on Paradise, was because I was like, this is, you know, this is a cool opportunity in the sense that like, yeah, it's cool to be able to like not have a cell phone and, you know, just hang out on a beach and get to know people for who they are for a month and then see what happens. Because you really don't get that kind of setting at any other time, right? Like the way I put it, when everyone would ask, like, how do you leave the show in a relationship? Like, blah, 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 and all that. This is so crazy. It's only a month. And really, if you think about the last relationship you guys were in and how it started, right? Typically, if you meet somebody, you meet them out at Whole Foods, at a bar, at whatever, right? You know, so you meet them, you get their number, you wait like 2 days to text them because you don't want to seem thirsty. And then maybe a week later you go on a date, and then, you know, you spend an hour, that whole week you've spent an hour with them in person getting to know them. And then you both probably have a job. Hopefully you have a job, you know, so you're busy during the week. Maybe you see them the next weekend, you know, maybe they spend the night, maybe they don't, depends on how conservative you are. I don't know. Then a couple weeks go by and like, it's been a month, and you might want to start to tell your friends about it. Like, oh, I'm seeing this person, like blah, blah, blah. And you've spent a total of like 6 hours with them, and it's been a month, you know? So then you do that, you start spending more time with each other. It's been like 4 months, and you know, now you've spent, you know, 30 full days together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's like on overdrive. We always talk about it, and I say it's like Bachelor summer camp. Like you're just, it's like a camp relationship. You just spend all your time with someone, and you're like, The feelings came quick.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, people, I mean, that's kind of how people, you see it seems so real on TV is because people talking to each other already know a lot about each other. And that's why I wanted to, that's why I was like, I'll give this a second shot. Like, I'll try this again. Cause like, that was cool. Being in that setting where you don't have anything to focus on besides the people around you. Cause that's really, most people don't get that opportunity as an adult. Because there's so much going on with work and everything else. Like, you're not going to ever put your cell phone down for a month. Like, you're not going to put it down for 2 hours, you know?
Yeah. It's really just like a cleanse in that regard. It's a social media cleanse, which I would love to have the opportunity to do.
Yeah. We're all going to be on our phones the second this interview's over. You're both going to grab, we're all going to grab it. You know what I mean? That's what's going to happen.
It's true. It's an addiction. It's a problem.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Bachelor diversity campaign that's been floating around the internet for the last few weeks?
Yeah. Isn't it like some Instagram that they made or something like that?
Yeah. And there's a petition asking production for, you know, a handful of actionable items, including like hiring a diversity consultant and hiring more producers of color and providing like mental health resources. First of all, like what do you think about that? And also, do you feel like maybe now is a moment where audiences and, you know, Bachelor alumni could actually successfully lobby the franchise for some real change when it comes to diversity and the way that the show treats people of color?
You know what? I think that, like, I don't know if any of the previous like contestants on the show or anything are really going to jump on that train. I think that from a political standpoint with what's going on right now, the network doesn't have any choice but to acknowledge it or else there's going to be an even bigger problem. As far as like what's actually going to happen with, you know, bringing more diversity to the show, honestly, I think that I could see them attempting it. It's just again, the fan base. And you're not going to change the fan base and what they want to see, right? So yes, it makes sense to petition for, you know, more change and having the show be more diverse. But at the same time, I highly doubt that the next cast of, you know, the Bachelor or the Bachelorette or whatever is going to be as diverse as that campaign wants it to be. Just because of, you know, what the fans of the show really want to see, you know, and it's not like the fans of the show are going to, you know, hate the show or anything if, you know, it's more diverse. But I think that when it comes to how locked in the fans are going to get to the cast members, they're still going to get locked into the ones that are white. Because that's kind of what that's like what they want to see on the show is, you know, I mean, and that's just my opinion. I could be wrong, but like, I don't know how much that campaign is actually going to do when it comes to changing the show.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
You know what I mean? Because you just, again, like you have to look at it from, if we were all sitting at a table with 20 people having a network meeting, you're going to be like, okay, how do we tackle this problem, but how do we keep our ratings up at the same time? You know what I mean? Because it's about numbers. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's really about numbers. And like, that's what a lot of people, it sucks, but a lot of people that are going to jump on this movement, they're not going to understand that, you know? And it's about money. Numbers equal money. So there's got to be a way where they can kind of keep both people happy and not take too big of a loss at the same time. You know?
Yeah. I mean, for almost 20 years, they've really leaned into cultivating the audience that they have. And so to now suddenly make a big change seems like a really bad business decision. They of course put themselves in that situation.
I mean,
Now they're having to thread a very fine needle.
Yeah. I mean, if you were the head of NASCAR and there was a big movement and somebody was like, I want NASCAR to be more diverse, they're going to be like, whoa, bro, like chill. Yeah, we'll work on it.
Oh, it's funny because NASCAR is having a really rough time handling this.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, think about it.
You know, they made the bold move of banning the Confederate flag. Huge. So
crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
People are shaken up. Shaken up. Yeah.
God. They finally decided a hate symbol is not welcome.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, no. We definitely hear you speaking to that tension, especially because so much of the production is white. What do you think about the new Bachelor that they announced, Matt James?
I think it's cool. I mean, I think it's great. I'm really interested to see, you know, the group of girls that they give him. You know what I mean? Because it would almost be, you know, I think it's going to be probably the most diverse cast that they've had, because you know there's going to be some girls that are going to be black, you know there's going to be some girls that are going to be white, and then there's going to be some other ones in there too, right? So I think it'll be the most diverse season so far, honestly, because they're definitely not going to give him 25 girls that are blonde.
I hope not.
Really hope not. Really hope not.
I don't think they will. Unless he specifically says that, which is a whole nother story. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's what he likes, but like that's, I guarantee that it's going to be a diverse cast, I think. I really think it's going to be all over the place, which is cool.
Yeah, we're excited to see when casting is announced, what they come up with. But why don't we turn to what your life has been since being on the show? What are you up to now? Can you catch us up a little bit on your career and your everyday life? What's going on?
Yeah, so I used to own a social media marketing agency, actually, when, you know, after all the shows and stuff like that. And when I started releasing music, I sold that agency and I started my own record label, actually. It's called Tripe Records. And basically, you know, I've just been doing music, and everything's been going really well. I've definitely been able to use, you know, the Bachelor platform to get my music out there and to perform a lot of places that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to perform at had I not had, you know, the opportunity to be on all those shows and stuff. And yeah, I mean, I actually have some songs coming out relatively soon with some pretty big artists that I'm super excited about. And yeah, I mean, I'm super happy with the way that things have been over the past year with music and stuff. James Kennedy from Vanderpump Rules actually is one of my best friends, and I've been performing with him a lot. I mean, I was performing with him all over the country, actually, until, you know, the whole quarantine thing happened. And he's been doing like all the official remixes of all my songs and stuff like that. And it's been cool because like people kind of, you know, when I perform with James, like they'll see James and then they'll see me and they'll be like, oh wait, like this is crazy. You know what I mean? which is funny because it's like a whole, it's like a whole thing. It's like, there's not any people from reality besides like, you know, people from like, you know, there's DJ Pauly D from like Jersey Shore, you know, he's one of the guys that jumped from reality TV to music, but like, most people don't do that. So it's like him, James, and me, you know? So it's like people notice that when it comes to like when we perform at venues and stuff like that, which is, it's always fun.
That's so much fun. I mean, are we going to see you pop up on VPR? Half of their cast was just fired for racism. So I think that they, you know, might have some openings.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, right? I mean, maybe, you know, I do hang out with James a lot, right? Maybe have to hit up Andy on Bravo to know, you know what
I mean? I mean, look, but, James had a glorious redemption arc, so I'm excited to see.
He did. He came back. He's sober now. I'm super happy for him, you know. Everything's going well for him, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. So before we let you go, just let our listeners know where they can find you and your music.
Yeah, you can find all my music on Spotify, Apple Music. Just search my name and all my songs are there, and hope you guys like them.
And that's it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guest, Grant Kemp, and our producers, Nick Offenberg and Sarah Patterson.
Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram at Here to Make Friends Pod. And you can follow us individually on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose.
We'll be back next week to recap The Bachelor, the greatest seasons ever, plus more bonus episodes that you won't want to miss.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.